This is Chrissy Hind of The Pretenders. I'm in the studio, and it's the 15th anniversary of Learning to Crawl. That's what we're talking about.
Good. Warners told me that you were kind of between projects, and that this was the one of the VPs of promotion, and that they weren't sure.
Oh, that I was between products now or on the Learning to Crawl album?
No, now. And you said, I have not heard any finished mixes or anything of a new Pretenders.
Yeah, no, we've recorded it, but that should come out later this year or the beginning of next year. So we've been wanting to tour, so, you know, it gets very tedious that, you know, make an album, promote it. And we just wanted to tour and do some gigs, so we were going to last year. We actually had something booked, and for various reasons, that didn't happen. So we've been wanting to get into these summer, what they call the summer sheds. So here we are. And it's been very fulfilling for the band. You know, we're a live band. We like to play.
Would any of this work that you're doing now out on the road maybe be incorporated into the new album, or is it?
We've recorded a couple of the songs we're doing, yeah. We open with a song that's on the new album, which Jeff Beck plays on, actually.
No kidding.
Not tonight, but yeah. on the album. And we do another song, which was written by a Cuban songwriter, Silvio Rodriguez. I might do that tonight. We've actually recorded about 15 or 16 songs.
Wow.
So we've done a lot for the album. And we'll just hone it down probably to 10 tracks and 10, 11, I suppose.
Do you write when you're out on the road at all, normally?
I haven't been on this tour.
So when you get back, you don't expect anything to pop in there at 11th hour?
Could do. We might record something else, yeah. Sure. I'll probably be coming over specifically for that, you know, to talk about
track.
It at that time.
Great.
Yeah, I would think so.
This fall?
Well, whenever they think it's coming out. Like I said, I don't know how it's being scheduled now. And I'm excited about it because Linda McCartney took the cover shot and it was her last portrait. And I kind of saw that as like a going away present from her. So I'm just excited to see it out in the, you know, in the shops. Oh, gosh, I met Linda about, let's see, what album did we have Middle of the Road on? Was it this,
yes.
Learning to Crawl? Yeah, it was around this time. And I'd had, I'd had a baby, and I got a present from her. And I hadn't met them, you know, it was from like Paul, Linda, and the kids, and I was like so made up about it. I thought, you know, something from Paul and Linda McCartney, I was really excited. And, you know, very touched, obviously. I hadn't met them. Then I was in Air Studios in London, and I saw Paul McCartney walk by. And, of course, I felt I had to walk up. I mean, he was my idol when I was 14. You know, I started writing songs for him when I was 14. And so I walked up and I said, excuse me, but thanks a lot for the baby clothes. And he looked a little embarrassed, and he went, oh, my wife. And I realized that she just, that was very Linda. In fact, I've met a lot of people who had met her like that, you know, where she had sent them something or written them a letter or, you know, she was such a great friend.
Would you possibly have met her and or Paul when you, when the Pretenders did the concerts for Campuchia? Remember that big concert in London, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't think I met her on that. I remember that concert because it was the biggest place I'd ever played. I was so nervous. And I went back years later and it seemed so small to me.
Have you heard those performances recently?
No, I don't. I can't remember.
Band was strong. Band sound good.
Yeah, I don't have any of the records, and I don't, you know, I can't really remember.
It was very impressive to us, and I'm here in the States, and I'm sure everybody, because I think you'd only had a few singles in the UK, and I think that was the first album was just imminent when you did that Campuchia concert.
Can't remember.
December-ish, 79 and 80. And
well, you know more than I do about it. I can't remember.
But, I mean, it was quite a stamp of, quite a nod of approval when you say to be on that stage with that event. At that stage in your career.
I guess, yeah.
Tell me about this photo that's going to grace the... Do you have a title yet?
Well, when I talked to Linda, I said, hey, I have this idea to call it Viva el Amor, which means like long live love. And she goes, oh, I love that. She goes, I love strong, and that's strong. And, you know, now when I think about it, I think she must have known that, you know, she was right near the end. But she set this thing up, and she really wanted to do it. And she goes, I've been turning down a lot of work, and nothing's excited me. She goes, but I really want to do this. And we were very close, and, you know, you know, I'm not surprised now when I think about it. And she loved the idea, and we tried to make it look like a, well, it's the idea is that it's going to look like one of those sort of a sort of propaganda poster, but with this, you know, very positive message.
Now, besides music, the two of you shared other things besides music in common as well. Was it just coincidence and common ground that you both worked on?
Well, Linda and I really bonded on the sort of the animal issues. I think that's where we found real solace in our relationship. That was our real common ground. Oh, I mean, we loved the music and we had a lot of other things, and she generally was, I mean, I didn't see her that much, you know, because she was with her family all the time. But she would always call and keep in touch, and like I said, she was like that with all of her friends. But when we did talk, it was very much about this, you know, how we were going to address these, you could say animal welfare, but in our case, it was really about vegetarianism. That was our raison d'etre. And, you know, I really, you know, tried to fire her up, and she did for me, too, so.
How long have you been a vegetarian?
Since 1969.
Oh, wow. Wow. What do you think in the area of animal rights? You mentioned animal welfare, animal rights, and they kind of go hand in hand with vegetarianism. What do you think her legacy in that area will be? How effective? How influential do you think she was in her life? And
Linda started a sort of fast frozen foods rather. Company, Linda McCartney's Meatless Meals in England. And, you know, that her idea was that you could just service people who were used to a meat-based diet and give them, you know, sort of substitutes, something I hadn't thought of. I'd been a brown rice hippie for so long that to me it was repellent, anything that even resembled... I mean, we could talk about the meat issue for hours as far as I'm concerned, you know. We might not have the time, and that might not be what you want to talk to me about, but... through her, I realized that it didn't really matter if it looked like a hot dog. It was the source that counted. And if that's what other people wanted, then, you know, I could go along with that. And she sort of had a lot to do with, you know, providing alternatives in England. And I don't know if that's been set up in America or not. So, and also, she was a great supporter of all the various animal, different animal rights groups, and would lend her support. Actually, myself and Kevin Godley and a few other people started a thing called ARC in England. It was more of an environmental group about 10 years ago. And Paul and Linda actually advertised our soap powders and things. The idea was to get sort of eco-friendly products in ordinary supermarkets rather than having to get them in health food stores. I spent a couple years setting this thing up, and that's something else. The whole animal issue is ultimately... the animal kingdom is part of, you know, the natural world and environment, and that's what that was what the issue is all about. And once you start to research the effects of the environment on, you know, animal agriculture, you'll see that that's probably have a more devastating effect on the environment than even automobiles. But like I said, that's a whole other subject, and my feeling is that most people don't really care. So.
Well, but that was my question was. I think they care more, at least people who claim to be rock and roll fans. I think they're aware more, and awareness is the first step towards caring.
Yeah, I guess, but you know, I don't get it, because when I was 17 and I went vegetarian, I didn't know any other vegetarians. I just thought about it for 5 minutes, and that's all I needed to do. I just gave it a moment's thought, and it was so obvious that whatever had gone before, what we had created wasn't ideal, and it was all going in the wrong direction. That's always the argument, isn't it? We've always done it like this. That's the argument. And voila, you know, what we've got isn't a great representation of a successful way of doing things.
But is it important?
But I didn't need anyone to nudge me in a direction. And now it's 30 years later, and I figure everyone has the information. It's quite obvious, all these things. Everyone knows what animal agriculture entails. And, you know, I've been particularly disappointed in, you know, rock and roll, because I thought they were... I wrongly assumed that people that were interested in rock music were, you know, being a product of the 60s, that they were, you know, into a higher consciousness. But, you know, I think I was wrong. And I think most people don't really care. And rock fans are mainly beer-swilling meat-eaters. That's what I see every night when I go out there.
But I myself know people in my own life that have been influenced by people such as yourself and people such as Linda McCartney to check out the issue. They've become aware because of the forum that you have, being in the entertainment business, mm-hmm. and Linda being in the entertainment business. And they've checked it out, and through becoming aware, I know a number of people who claim that they went veggie because of Linda McCartney. Maybe not a direct mm-hmm. circuit, direct line, point A to point B, but they became aware of it. Mm. And it's got to help.
Well, it's got to help. I mean, we'll never give up. And I'll use Linda's passing, you know, and milk it for everything I can now. I mean, I plan on using it. And I know, I feel she's spurring me on to do so and use it to, you know, heighten the profile of this issue, if you want to call it an issue. I guess that's what it is.
What about the naysayers who would say, and this is really another issue, who would say, okay, someone like a Linda McCartney was vegetarian for 30 years, active in this field and stuff like that, and dies young of breast cancer.
Where's the connection?
I'm asking you. You
see how that? Do I know? I don't see a connection.
Yeah. That's a doggone issue, too, that seems to be on the rise. Seems like a lot.
I think that indicates that most people think that you get cancer from meat eating. Which is, you know, every time someone gets cancer, it seems that the doctor takes them off red meat.
That's true.
I suppose that's why people say that. And the other thing is, when you try to do something that, you know, for the betterment of anything, you'll always get detractors. Somehow you pose a threat for them. So if
people don't like change, you mentioned that earlier.
Well, people also don't like for it to be implied that they're doing something wrong and you're doing it right. You know, which is why, you know, whatever. Myself, I'm just a rock singer. I'll just do my songs right. I don't like to have much contact with the public anymore because I find it infringes on my personal freedom too much. And, you know, I'm really happy to do the shows. And I love making records. And if you ask me to sing, I'll sing till the cows come home, you know. But I don't like to be so much of a public figure because I find it's too... you know, the whole celebrity thing it's not for me. It's just not for me.
Did you dabble in that at one time?
No, I never have. I've always kept a really low profile, and I've always stayed out of it as much as I can. I just do what I would say the minimum to get by and to service my record and to help my band and to, you know, keep the thing. And the animal causes. I'll always, same thing with Linda. You know, she used to say to me, no one wants to hear what I have to say. And I say, hey, you're famous, so use it, you know, do it for the animals. You got their attention, so use it. And, you know, I think that's when the sort of, you know, lightning bolt struck her, because she realized she could use her voice to help the animals. And that's how I have to look at it. If it can do some... Also, I meet many, many people who say, thanks so much for speaking out for... I mean, I could get into the whole negative backlash of people say, why animals, not people, and all the other stuff. You know, I could talk about it for hours, the arguments I've had. But what I call the animal people, the environmentalists, they will always say, please speak for us. We have no voice. Please speak for us. And that's why I do it.
You know what I like?
And because I think I'm very driven to do it, and I think it's important, much more important than rock and roll music.
You've done something for me that's interesting. I've always been concerned with the environment. I remember the first Earth Day, I was out there in 1970, April 1970, picking up trash in the neighborhood. I never thought of it until just a few moments ago, as you pointed out, that the issue, say, meat issue, the animal rights issue, is really very directly connected to an environmental issue. And that's interesting that you connected the two. And that's an interesting distinction.
Well, how can we have a natural environment with no animals in it?
I don't know that it's been spun that way in America, but maybe it needs to be. That's a good point.
Well, it's obvious, isn't it?
It is now.
If we have no animal kingdom, all you have to do is open your eyes. What chance have we got?
Well, we're part of the animal kingdom. That's where man gets in trouble. Where mankind separates himself from it. We've always gotten in trouble when we seem to think we're outside it.
And surely,
right,
if someone can condone the torture of an animal, I mean, how can you really trust that person?
No.
Can you trust the awareness of someone who will eat something that they know has been, you know, unfairly procured and tormented and abused and killed and, you know, slipping around on its own blood and feces to bring it to your plate?
For profit?
Can you trust a person who does that? Myself, I can't. I can't put my hand on my heart and say I trust a meat eater. And that's the bottom line. And so... I'm not talking about it. You know, there is a time and place for killing, and there's an appropriate time and place for everything, but not in a slaughterhouse. Animal agriculture is a bigger contributor to the, you know, depletion of the ozone layer than anything else. Just the methane gas produced by cows, all the slurry, the nitrates that pollute the water supply off of pig farming and everything. Animal agriculture is the killer to our environment. The way it's done.
I saw stories about that in North Carolina where the swine production is, it's unholy what they do.
Yeah, well, it's pretty sick, and anyone that perpetuates these evil practices by buying into it in any way is no friend of mine, I'll tell you, pal. You know, I can't be dealing with that stuff.
Back to the new album. since I haven't heard it, I'm not a flying blind here. What's the lineup of the band on this record?
We've got the same lineup. Adam Seymour on guitar. Martin Chambers, of course, on drums. Andy Hobson on bass. We did bring in Tom Kelly, who's a songwriter that I write with. In the last few years, I've written quite a few things. I wrote I'll Stand By You, Night in My Veins with him. And he played bass and guitar on, well, most of the album, really. He really injected a lot of, you know, good energy into what we were doing.
And you co-wrote with him on
several songs? Yeah, I co-wrote with him on a couple of songs on the album.
I like what you've done today.
Uh-huh.
It's been real good.
Yeah, that's been really fun working with them. It's Tom Kelly and Billy Steinberg. But we got Tom. Tom's the musician, and Billy's the lyricist of that team. And I sort of get in between them. And, yeah, I think we've written some good tunes together. There'll be a couple on this album. And Tom's a hell of a musician, so we asked him in to, you know, just to give us a hand on some things, you know, just to really just to make it more fun.
Where'd you cut and who produced?
We did a few tracks with Stephen Street in the Townhouse in London. And then we recorded with Stephen Haig at Sarm Studios in London, and mixed with Bob Clearmountain at Bearsville in the Woodstock.
He's got a great setup. Uh-huh. Stand up there. He's got it made. And it's not skedded a hard date for release yet. You just open before the end of the year.
Well, I'm kind of thinking now it'll be more like February because, you know, we're getting on now in the year, and because I'm on tour, getting the artwork and getting everything turned around in time. I don't think it can come out at Christmas because there's all these other Christmas albums coming out. I don't really know about all that. You know, putting a record out is a big, you know, it's like a big corporate thing now. You have to kind of go along with the scheduling according to who else is out and everything. And myself, you know, I'm not, when it comes out, it's fine with me. I'm not in any particular hurry. And the album's there, so.